Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 24th, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host, Ron Meniza, is just coming out of the hospital. It's a whole thing. He's okay. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this show do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Okay, the latest on Lyme disease. It's lousy. So I thought I wasn't getting better fast enough, so I asked my PCP to prescribe me some doxycycline, and I haven't tried to take it yet because Ron's been in the hospital. He got another bowel blockage because he has such a sensitive digestive system and he has that bad spot in his small intestine, and he had a colonoscopy endoscopy and it caused a bowel blockage. So he's okay now. He didn't have to have surgery. They cleared it out and he's going to come home in an hour, which is great. So I'd been running around. I didn't take him to his colonoscopy because I wasn't feeling well on Wednesday. So I think I was major herxing. So I've been taking amoxicillin, and amoxicillin kills Lyme. It just takes longer. And I've been augmenting the amoxicillin with Buhner herbs. I've been getting having some really hard days and some really good days. And I had a couple of bad days Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday I felt a lot better. So I asked for doxycycline, but I'm afraid to try it because doxycycline can cause nausea. And I've never taken it before, and I don't know what it will do to me. Ron had no nausea with it at all. A lot of people say that it is hard on their stomachs. I'm not sure what will happen for me. And when you take doxycycline, you're supposed to take it on a full stomach. So that doesn't bother your stomach. And then you can take famotidine later in the day. The only problem with taking famotidine is it's a H2 blocker. It blocks acid production, and you actually need acid to help to absorb the doxycycline. So it's a whole thing. So you can take the doxycycline with ginger, take it with ginger. I tell my patients to take it with ginger tea or a piece of candied ginger or ginger ale, and it'll help protect your stomach while that's going on. I would probably also take it with some DGL, deglyceryzinated licorice, which can soothe your stomach. I would probably just chew the DGL and swallow it with ginger beer, ginger ale, ginger tea, chew some candy ginger, and send it down that way with a lot of food in your stomach. And I may try that. I'm not sure. Today, I'm not feeling too bad. Yesterday and today, I feel better. I cut back on the dose of my Buhner herbs, which, you know, Buhner suggests you can do. I'm just wondering if it's a little bit too much for me. You know, with all the stress I have, my liver is probably not too happy, and I have to be careful with that. I have been using my vagus nerve stimulator, and that helps. I think that, you know, the Lyme, with my history of vaccine stuff, the COVID vaccine stuff, it made it so that my vagus nerve is very sensitive, and so that will give me the tremors. I haven't had any tremors since Thursday. So that's great. A few days without tremors. I think I still have the lightheadedness. And what I'm noticing is I wake up and I feel pretty good. And then I take my Buhner herbs and it makes me, and I get lightheaded almost right away. So I don't know if my liver needs clearing or the Buhner herbs themselves are too much. That's why I cut the dose. And I added back in pectisol, which is modified citrus pectin. And modified citrus pectin is a great anti-inflammatory, and it helps to absorb toxins out of your system. So, and then during the day, if I'm feeling very herxy, I take Alka-Seltzer Gold. And Alka-Seltzer Gold is a kind of Alka-Seltzer. It's hard to find anymore. You don't see it in the grocery store. I got it a few years ago, and it was still available online, and now I can't find it. Which is okay. So the difference between Alka-Seltzer Gold and regular Alka-Seltzer. Regular Alka-Seltzer has the bicarbonates in it, but it also has aspirin. And I don't need the aspirin. I just need the bicarbonates. And what the bicarbonates do is they help to neutralize. They help to neutralize the toxins. The toxins tend to be. They tend to be positively charged. So bicarbonate is negatively charged. So it helps to neutralize them. So not to worry. It's if you can't find Alka-Seltzer Gold and you need something to help you with Herxheimer reactions, you can still get Tri-Salts. And there's a bunch of companies that make a product called Tri-Salts. And it's a powder. Alka-Seltzer Gold is a little tablet that you drop into water and it fizzes. And it tastes like, you know, club soda. And what you can do, a nice thing to do is to make it a little more palatable, depending if you like it hot or cold. If you could drink it room temperature, I wouldn't drink it... you want some of the fizz. I wouldn't drink it warm, but you want to drink it either room temperature or you can put ice into it. And then it's fizzy. And then you squeeze lemon into it. You get to get some fresh lemon and squeeze the fresh lemon into it. The lemon is good for your liver anyway. So then you have a little lemon seltzer and it helps to calm you down. So you can use the Alka-Seltzer Gold if you can find it. But a Tri-Salt product is something that you want to look for. And it has... It has tri-salts. It has sodium, usually sodium, potassium, magnesium bicarbonate or calcium bicarbonate. Anyway, it's called tri-salts because it's three bicarbonates and there's no aspirin in it. And that is actually easy to find. And it's usually in powder form. And in the powder form, you use a teaspoon instead of dropping a tablet. And the powder will fizz right up. You can throw your ice cubes into it if you want to and then squeeze your lemon into it. And I do recommend lemon. Lemon or lime is fine because they'll do pretty much the same thing. They help to encourage bile flow. And they help your liver to work better. I can tell that, you know, when in naturopathic medicine, we talk about Herring's Law. Herring's Law is a homeopathic law. And Herring's Law says that you heal from top to bottom. So your symptoms, if you have symptoms up top in your brain or, you know, in your upper body, they will tend to abate first, and then they will travel down your body. You'd heal from inside to out. So from the most inner symptoms to the most outer symptoms, top to bottom, inside to out. And I think first to last. So you tend to feel like, emotionally I feel better, but I've still got the intermittent lightheadedness. And I noticed that the Buna herbs make me feel lightheaded. Once I take them, like I'll wake up and I won't be lightheaded and I'll take the Buna herbs and then I feel lightheaded. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do about that. If I'm going to skip Buna herbs sometimes and pulse them or what I'm going to do exactly. The amoxicillin does not bother me. I mean, and I'm doing a good job with the amoxicillin, doing a lot of probiotics. I really recommend this. If you have to take an antibiotic, you want to take a product that contains Saccharomyces boulardii, which is a yeast that cannot be killed by antibiotics. And the thing is that my understanding is that the antibiotics do not stay in your system through the whole day. They go through you. Amoxicillin is poorly metabolized by the liver and it goes through your kidneys and you release most of it from your urine. So you can take liver herbs. So I am taking milk thistle and then I'm doing a product that's energetically enhanced for detoxification. One of it is for the liver drainage and the other is for brain nerve cleansing. So I'm taking that regularly. I'll take it both separately in a shot and then I will also amplify my water with it. I'll put 10 drops of each product in the water and I'm sipping that through. And that's a different system than Buna. Those are not Buna herbs and Buna was not a fan of those products. But you know what? I have them. And I think they do help somewhat. So I'm doing Buna for the actual antimicrobial effects. And then I'm doing that for some of the detox to help with the Herx. So for the Herx, you've got your Tri-Salts or your Alka-Seltzer Gold. And then the other thing you can take is binders. So binders can be, I have a zeolite spray, and then I have binders that have combinations of zeolite, chlorella, and charcoal. The problem with that is you have to take it completely away from anything else you're taking because they'll draw those things out. The modified citrus pectin, which is Pectisol, will not, they don't do as bad a job of drawing everything out. And yet Pectisol is recommended to take half hour. You wait half an hour before eating after taking it, and you should also have a 2-hour gap of no food before you take it. You can drink plenty of clear liquids, but you know the second dose of the day, you want to have not eaten for 2 hours. And I don't know that my stomach is empty at any point in the day. It's definitely empty in the morning. So that first dose I get in, I drink it, and then I wait half an hour before ingesting anything else. But later in the day, I have to make sure I have a 2 hour window where I don't eat anything. And then I can take my my Buna herbs with the Pectisol in it. So we've got a lot of things, a lot of detox going and some antimicrobial stuff, and I'm still taking the amoxicillin. Since Ron is not here, I don't want to try the doxycycline in case I get sick. And I'm still nervous to try it. I may be sitting looking at it. I may wind up not taking it. I don't know. If I feel like I'm not getting better quick enough, at some point I'll probably start on the doxycycline. Anyway, so when Ron gets home, that might not be a bad time to try it, like try it in the evening with supper. And if I lose my supper, then I won't be able to take it. There are people who just can't take doxycycline. There are other people who just can't take amoxicillin. Amoxicillin I have absolutely no problem with. I can take it. Doesn't bother my stomach. I can take it with food, without food. And then as long as I take lots of probiotic, I don't have the digestive problems with it, the downstairs digestive problems. So yeah, so I take a Saccharomyces boulardii in the morning, and then midday, because I'm taking the amoxicillin at either end of the day, in the middle of the day, I take a multiprobiotic at that point. And so that tends to get on board. Hopefully the amoxicillin is out of my digestive system. And I think it's helping, because my digestive system is not too bad. And the interesting thing about through this is that, except on days when I'm really feeling herxy and inflamed, my appetite is still good. I have no nausea. Sometimes my appetite is reduced. Otherwise, my appetite is pretty normal. It's reduced because I'm not exercising as much, because I'm afraid to get on the bike with this lightheadedness. So we're going to wait until I'm feeling better before I do that. Anyway, so that's the Lyme stuff. And so one of the things that's the issue with Lyme disease is it gums up your lymphatics, because you are killing all these microorganisms, and then you're having your white blood cells are doing battle and dying, and then you have pieces of microorganism that your body's trying to clean up, and your body still makes anti-inflammatory compounds, cytokines, and the white blood cells go after these pieces as they're being broken up by all the different antimicrobials I'm doing. So the Buna herbs that I am taking, I may have mentioned this last week, I'm taking Japanese knotweed, cat's claw, kudzu, which is a great brain and nerve cleanse. So Japanese knotweed actually is, Japanese knotweed will kill a lot of things. It'll go after Bartonella, and it will go after Lyme, and it will go after Babesia. Cat's claw mostly goes after Lyme, but both cat's claw and Japanese knotweed will go after persister cells. So remember that spirochetes and some of these other tick-borne illnesses, but Babesia, Bartonella, they have persister cells. So they will hide behind biofilms, and they will protect themselves, and they will persist in your body. So you have the active forms, and the antibiotics are good at getting at the active forms, whether it's doxycycline or amoxicillin. They will both kill the active forms. Doxycycline will go after stationary forms, but it pretty much can't go after cyst forms. But your Japanese knotweed and your cryptolepis and your cat's claw, they will go after persister forms. I believe Hotunia will as well. And Hotunia is very good at going after Bartonella. And so is Japanese knotweed. And so is cryptolepis. And cryptolepis is one of those herbs that you call keep. Kills everything except people. So it goes after everything, and it goes after all of the forms. And so cryptolepis is, I believe it is anti-malarial. So that means it's going to go after Babesia, and it definitely goes after Lyme and all of its forms, and it goes after Bartonella too. So I'm doing a lot of killing. And, the killing is kind of intense. And so if I could get some more exercise, that would be helpful. But it's hard for me to exercise right now the way that I'm feeling. And I may just try to go for a short bike ride tomorrow. We'll see. Because I know that would help my lymphatics. So again, talking about the lymphatics, one of the things you need to do is keep your lymphatics clear. And that so those compounds that I'm taking, the drop dosages that are energetically enhanced, they help with lymphatic cleansing. I could also add in burdock, cleavers, burdock and cleavers and red clover. I do have some red clover tea some days, but those are great lymphatic cleansers. So anyway, let's think about lymphatic cleansers for the moment. And that's very funny. A couple of blood cells met, but their relationship was all in vain. That's very funny. So let's see. We wanted... okay, so there was an article I was going to look at and I can't find it. So here's ways to improve your lymphatic function. Let's see. So if you have Lyme disease for any length of time, you're aware of the value that adding detoxification strategies to your treatment protocol can help. So when you detox, it can help combat Herxheimer reactions, lessen inflammation, boost energy, improve your sleep, and so much more. You think of the liver and digestive system when you consider where the detox happens in the body, but your lymphatic system is really important for detox too. It's a vast drainage network of organs, vessels, and other structures throughout your body. That includes the spleen, the tonsils, the thymus, adenoids, lymph nodes, lymph ducts, lymph vessels, lymph capillaries, and the mucous membranes of the bowel. You have a lot of these things in the bowel called Peyer's patches, and they're huge lymphatic rests, and they have lots and lots of white blood cells in it. Most of your immune system is in your large intestine. Who knew? It's got all the microbiome. It's got most of the microbiome, and it's got those lovely Peyer's patches. So you do a lot of battle with microorganisms in your gut. So the structures coordinate nicely with each other and they move the lymph, which is a colorless fluid that contains pathogen-fighting blood cells, white blood cells, protein, and salts throughout your body. And the entire lymphatic system is an integral part of your immune system. If you can keep it operating efficiently, you'll be better equipped to fight off Lyme and co-infections like Bartonella, Babesia, and Mycoplasma. So the lymphatic system has similar action to the cardiovascular system. Many of the functions of the lymphatic system happen without much awareness on your part. But if you ever have a cold, you've probably felt swollen, bean-shaped bumps in your neck. Those are your lymph nodes, and they're enlarged, and so your body is working to help you fight the infection. So you have lymph nodes all over the place, and here's a neat list of them. You have the cervical lymph nodes that are in your neck. You have lymph nodes in your thoracic duct, which is at the top of your, it's near your sternal notch, above your breastbone. The thymus. With thymus, they say the thymus involutes after you're a teenager, but the thymus does make important lymphatic products. And then you have the lymphatics in your mammary glands, in your breasts. So men and women both have those. You have axillary lymph nodes. Those are in your armpits. You have the whole spleen, and the spleen is a whole organ. I pointed to this is not my spleen. This is the right side. On the left side is where your spleen is. The spleen is about even with your liver. It's at the top of your ribs underneath it. There's the cisterna chill, which is right in the middle. That's what you would probably call in Chinese medicine the triple warmers, right in the middle of your abdomen. Then you have lumbar lymph nodes. Who knew? So you have the lumbar lymph nodes that are in your back at the lumbar level, you know, at the low back. You have lymphatics of the upper limbs. You have lymph nodes in your arms. You have lymph nodes in the pelvis. These are not the same as the inguinal lymph nodes, but they're in your pelvis and they fight infections in your pelvis. Then you have the inguinal lymph nodes, and sometimes you can feel those, like if you get any kind of a reproductive infection. So if you have a yeast infection or if you have herpes or something like that, you get a urinary tract infection, you might feel inguinal lymph nodes, and that's in the crease that between your abdomen and your legs, you can feel them. They'll pop sometimes. I can feel them on patients sometimes. And then you have lymphatics in your lower limbs, in your legs, in your thighs, and your calves. So the lymphatic system is a waste management center for your body, transports lymph to the lymph nodes, removes cellular garbage like metabolites, excess fluid, worn out red blood cells, toxins, infections, and other harmful substances. The lymph nodes then evaluate the waste using immune cells called lymphocytes and then clean and discard it. We all have 600 to 700 lymph nodes. Wow, who knew? And the number varies depending on the size of the nodes, the side of the body where the nodes are located on, and whether you're male or female. Lymph nodes are located in clusters, and the main area, as we said, are the neck, the chest, the armpits, the abdomen, and the groin. Once the lymph fluid leaves the lymph nodes, it's returned to the cardiovascular system by way of the right and left subclavian veins. So subclavian veins means, subclavian means they're underneath the clave is your clavicle. So you have veins over here and those veins go back to your heart. And they're deep in your neck and then the whole thing just repeats itself. If it didn't complete the task of removing your body's fluid surplus, the fluid would accumulate and you'd notice swelling. Each day, the lymphatic system cleans up and drains, wait for it, 3 liters of lymph. Lyme is part of the picture. In a perfect world, the lymphatic system could diligently perform its duties without interruption, but there are several factors that can throw a wrench into its operations, including Lyme disease. When Lyme or other chronic illness is mixed with our toxic and fast-paced world, our bodies have to contend with more cellular debris than they can handle. This leads to congestion in the elaborate lymphatic drainage system and produce symptoms like body aches, joint pain and stiffness, fatigue, lethargy, brain fog or Lyme brain, swelling anywhere, sore throat, a feel of puffiness or bloating. So it's important to make mention of a more extreme case of impaired lymphatic system, which is lymphedema. This condition occurs when there's a blockage in your lymph system, which can causes the protein-rich lymph fluid to accumulate in tissues of the body, resulting in severe swelling. I have patients who have elephant legs. Their legs are really, really big because they can't get the lymph. They have lymphatic blockages that prevent the lymph from leaving their legs. And it can develop in one leg or both legs and other places. The most well-known causes of lymphedema are cancer-related, like when a cancerous tumor impedes lymph flow or when lymph nodes are removed as part of cancer treatment or other surgical procedures. However, lymph nodes can become blocked by other means as well, like infection by bacteria, viruses, or parasites, and by congenital abnormalities. Although lymphedema may not be a classic symptom of tick-borne disease, Lyme patients can potentially develop it. Indeed, you may have heard of patients describe the distressing symptom, but it's not widely understood which of the stealth microbes may be the process. I don't think I have lymphedema, but I do think that my liver is kind of overwhelmed, and that's part of why I'm having trouble kicking this. Treatments for lymphedema often involve pressure gradient wrapping techniques, compression garments, manual lymph drainage from a certified therapist, so what you want to do, we're going to give you some ideas about how to limit your lymph congestion at home, the milder variation of an overtaxed and overworked lymphatic system. If you don't have extreme swelling anywhere and yet you're having trouble kicking Lyme, balancing your lymphatic system at home can be a good thing to do. So the cardiovascular system has a distinct pumping mechanism that causes the heart muscle to contract and relax cyclically. The lymphatic system doesn't. The flow of lymph through the body is determined in a couple of ways. The contraction of surrounding muscles, tissues, and joints. That's why exercise is really good for your lymphatics. And also the contraction of specialized muscles that reside in the lymphatic vessel walls. So it means that engaging those muscles, tissues, and joints are key to supporting your lymph system and promoting immune health. Plus, if you need an excuse to indulge in a massage, you're about to get one. The massage is a great way to move lymphatics. So how do you get your lymph moving? You move. Since your lymphatic system doesn't have that central pump, it's important to engage in movement and exercise as much as your body tolerates. Contracting and relaxing your muscles and moving your joints aids lymph flow, and there's no one type of activity you have to do. The sky's the limit, whatever you want to do. So, I mean, in my case where I'm having balance issues and I'm not feeling well, I haven't been moving as much, and that is a double-edged sword because the excess activity, my energy is fragile. If I overexert myself, I get those energy crashes, especially when I'm fighting Lyme. But on the other hand, if I would exercise, I would probably feel better because it's moving the lymph along. So simple range of motion exercises like raising your arms, marching your feet in place from a seated position, and calf raises are a great place to begin. And then when you can get to do yoga, Pilates, walking, biking, or swimming, you can do that. Swimming is difficult for me because, you know, I have to get somewhere to do it. And I'm in a place where it's just hard for me to get it together, to get over to the community center or a body of water that I can get into. If I was at my mother's, I would go to the pool, and because it's really easy. It's right there. It's not a big deal. But here, so what I've been doing mostly is gentle yoga, as much yoga as I can tolerate. And I'm tolerating gentle stretching, yin and restorative yoga. And that's about what I've been doing. And then you can move up to more intensive activities. So if you're in a healthier place, rebounding on a trampoline is great. Vibrational activities on like the power plate are helpful. So you want to choose an activity that's right for your current level of fitness and the symptoms you're trying to manage without causing a flare. And that's what I'm dealing with. What's going to cause a flare in me? So I have the issue of my mobility is limited because of my legs, because of the spinal stenosis. So you absolutely want to stay hydrated. Oh, I did not bring my water into the room. Oh dear. So to keep your juices flowing, you want to minimize your intake of dehydrating beverages like alcohol and caffeine. Drink more hydrating drinks like purified water, mineral water, herbal tea, and water with electrolytes. Any of those are fine. So lymph flow fluid is mainly water, like 95% or so. So maintaining adequate fluid intake is going to help to keep your lymph moving. When you have conditions like POTS that overlap with chronic Lyme, it can make maintaining appropriate fluid levels tricky. So then you add your trace minerals and your sea salt so you absorb better. So supportive enzymes and herbs. So there are supplements that can help you with your lymphatics to dispose of proteins, bacteria, toxins, and other substances. So bromelain, papain, and peptidase are protein digesting enzymes that helps break down some of the proteins that contribute to inflammation. I'm not taking those. I'm taking serrapeptase and natokinase. So I'm taking those proteolytic enzymes, and those are, I'm using those. Those will help break down biofilms, and also they help to keep your blood thin so you don't get blood clots. And I'm also, the main reason I'm taking the natokinase is to help with blood pressure, but it's going to help with this too. And then the serrapeptase I got because I have fibrosis around my L4 nerve root, and it was to help to break that up. But those are things you give during Lyme treatment because they help to break down biofilms and also to break down the proteinaceous inflammatory compounds. So then you take turmeric, which I'm taking plenty of turmeric. I'm taking water dispersible turmeric as well as just a light turmeric supplement. And that helps that's a biliary. It helps to move bile through your lymphatic system and through your liver. Sarsaparilla, which I'm actually not taking, but it is a lymphagogue. It binds and helps to dispose of endotoxins released from the microbes during die-off. So Buhner was not a big fan of sarsaparilla. He didn't think it really helped, and yet it's a lymphagogue, so it can be helpful. And I used to make sure I put something that was a definite lymphagogue in Lyme tinctures. I would use either red root, which is the next thing we're going to talk about, red root or sarsaparilla. That always went into the tinctures, and I'm thinking I'm going to maybe go get some red root. I actually have a lymphagogue tincture that has cleavers, red clover, and burdock in it, which are three great lymphagogue herbs. Echinacea also happens to be a lymphagogue. So is Phytolacca, poke root. Poke root is considered a toxic botanical, so you use it in drop dosages. But it's thought of as a botanical for hard lymphatic swellings. And then iris, also considered to be a toxic botanical used in drop dosages. That's for boggy lymphatic swellings. But red root, also known as New Jersey tea, ceanothus, it is a coagulant. I might skip that then and go for the other things because red root, because it increases coagulation, I'm trying to prevent that. And if you have a lot of inflammatory compounds, you're hypercoagulable. So that may not be a good one to do during Lyme disease. I didn't think of that. But sarsaparilla would be just fine. And red clover actually has coumarins in it, which is the precursor, it's a natural compound that's similar to coumadin. And there are coumarins in red clover that help to actually thin your blood. And then burdock is a great liver tonic, and cleavers is a great kidney tonic. So they all, and then red clover is very nourishing as well. Has a lot of nutrition in them. You can dry brush your shin. Something I haven't done. I have a dry brush. I just haven't done it. I need to do it. And I've had it for years. So you dry brush your skin. What you do is you get the dry brush. You get a natural brush, you know, with like a wooden or bamboo handle. And then it has nice bamboo bristles, and you brush your limbs. You brush your limbs, and you brush the limbs. I mean, you can use your hands if you don't have a dry brush, but if you get the dry brush, it's more a little more stimulating, and you just brush your skin all over your arms, all over your legs, and you brush in the direction of your abdomen and your heart, and you can brush your torso as well, and you brush your torso. So if you brush your abdomen, you brush upward towards your heart. And if you want to go over your chest, you go downward towards your heart as well. And if you can reach, you can do it on your back as well. And if you can't reach, get someone you love to do it for you. And so that will remove dead skin cells, unclog your pores, improve your circulation, and improve your lymphatic flow. So you might find that dry brushing is invigorating. And so you can start with your foot and do strokes all the way up to your, start with your feet, then go to your legs, do your upper extremities, then your chest and abdomen. And then if you can, you maybe want to shower after that and then hydrate with a natural moisturizer afterwards. And like I said, get natural bristles. Don't get ones with plastic bristles, because why do this and impart microplastics onto yourself? So when you get the brushes, and also synthetic bristles can be hard on your skin, in addition to leaving microparticles of microplastics. So you can get ones that have boar's hair, vegetable fiber, bamboo fiber. And the one I got at a health food store, so I'm sure it's made of, I just haven't looked at it in a while, so I don't know what it's made of. And then you can get manual lymph drainage therapy. There's our massage therapists. There's massage therapists in our area here that you can go to, and they'll do lymphatic drainage therapy. And there's pumping and scooping motions, soft strokes, gliding. And I bet you could go on YouTube and find a self lymphatic drainage massage procedure, because there's everything on YouTube. They might use a little roller on your face with a nice stone, and that will massage the lymphatics in your face, and it'll go downward. The mild friction across your skin encourages your lymph to flow with less effort, and you don't use massage therapy. So that's something you can do. When you detoxify the lymphatic system, it's also, if it's a good fit for you, if you're looking for relief from pain or digestive dysfunction and trying to calm your parasympathetic nervous system. So your parasympathetic nervous system is your rest and digest. So it will help you to be calmer in general. So the lymphatic system has a lot of benefits for your health. And when you attend to the lymphatic system, you will probably feel better no matter what's going on with you. But if you tend to it while you're treating Lyme disease, you're probably going to feel better. So that maybe that's the theme of the weekend, to work on the lymphatic system. So as I said, so in terms of Ron, I'm going to go right as soon as I'm finished with this, making this video and recording, I'm going to run to the hospital and grab Ron, because he will be done with his he'll be done with his care there, and then we're going to bring him home, and then we're going to ultimately find out if and when he's going to have more surgery to help to get rid of this blockage. I know he doesn't want to do it, but I'm just afraid this is going to happen again. So I'm recording this show around the day of the solstice. So I wanted to talk about the solstice. Here's some cool solstice facts. So the June solstice in 2026 is about to happen. Well, if you're listening to this, it already happened, because this is going to drop on Wednesday, June 24th. So the days are already getting shorter. I know you don't want to hear that. But in terms of day length, of course, your peak day length is the day of the solstice, which this year is June 21st. And then you do start losing minutes gradually. And you might start noticing the sun setting a little bit early. You notice a little bit by the end of July. In August, you definitely start to notice it. But there's a zenith of day length. And when you're at that zenith, you don't lose minutes very fast at first. So that's why you get most of July and into the beginning of August where the days still feel like they're pretty long. And then you start losing minutes faster as you get towards the end of July and into September. October, November, you definitely, because you're losing minutes, you're at the steep part of the curve because it's a normal curve. And there's a flattening effect that happens at the top of the curve. And there's a flattening effect that happens at the bottom of the curve around the winter solstice. Like you don't lose minutes as fast in the beginning of December leading up to the solstice there. And then it stays dark for a while and then it starts to climb. And you really notice it starting to climb in February. Well, now you're going to really start to notice it drop in August, and you won't notice it as much in July. So you have some long days and summer fun to look forward to still. But after Sunday the 21st, we're going to start losing minutes. So in 2026, the solstice moment will fall at 8:25 a.m. UTC. So UTC is universal time. And that's what the time is at Greenwich in England. And that's on June 21st. It will be 4:25 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So that means it's going to happen at 4:25 in the morning. That's the moment of the solstice. And what the solstice actually is, at the June solstice, the sun reaches its northernmost point relative to the earth. The point is on the celestial Tropic of Cancer, a parallel which is around the sky. So that's at 23.5 degrees north of the celestial equator. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. At the solstice, the northern hemisphere is the most tilted towards the sun by the maximum angle of 23.5 degrees. Conversely, the south is the most tilted away by the same amount, and they are having the winter solstice down south because the bottom of the earth is tilted away from the sun. So here's the sun. If you're looking at me on YouTube, here's the sun. My hand is the sun. And then my arm over here is the earth. And we are at the northern hemisphere is tilted towards the sun. And the bottom of my arm is the southern hemisphere. And you can see that they're tilted away from the sun. So during the winter solstice, it looks like this. So you have the sun over here. Here, let's do it this way. The sun over here, the sun is going to be below my arm. It's at the bottom. So the bottom tilt, so the southern hemisphere is closest to the sun, and the northern hemisphere, that's us up here, is away from it. And that's how that works. So the south is most tilted away and they have winter right now. So the main effects at the June solstice, no matter where you are on Earth, the sun rises and sets farthest north on your horizon. The sun's directly overhead at local noon as viewed from the Tropic of Cancer. So it's never directly overhead here because we're too far from the Tropic of Cancer. Tropic of Cancer is at 23.5 degrees. And that's what the Tropic of Cancer is. It runs through, I think Key West is at the Tropic of Cancer. So there are parts of the United States that are in the tropics, but not much. They are like in the continental United States. I think the only place that's in the tropics is Key West, is the bottom of Florida. So, and you know, the Keys are these little pieces that stick off the peninsula, bottom part of the peninsula of Florida. And that's it. Everything. So Florida is not tropical. It is subtropical. My mother's house in Venice is at about the 27th parallel. And the Tropic of Cancer goes through, like I said, Key West. And I don't think that the Tropic goes through California. Of course, Hawaii is in the tropics and Puerto Rico is the territories. Lots of territories that are in the tropics. Puerto Rico is one and any of the Virgin Islands, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and places in the South Pacific like Guam and American Samoa. And there's probably more that I can't think. Is the Marianas Islands, is that the U.S. territory? Anyway, so the places that are tropical that are part of the U.S. are either territories or they're Key West, Florida. That's it. We do have parts of, there's no continental United States that's above the Arctic Circle. The only state that's above the Arctic Circle, has parts of it above the Arctic Circle, is Alaska. And I think that's it. I don't know if there are other territories that are in the Arctic Circle, but Alaska, definitely part of it is. So that's the 60th parallel. And there are parts of Alaska that are north of 60. And there was a TV show in Canada called North of 60, because there's a lot of Canada that's north of 60. And of course, North of 60 focused on Inuit people, because that's who lives up there. And then there's North of North, which is another, that's a good show if you ever want to watch it. North of North, I don't know when there's going to be a season two, but it was a really cute show. It's a Canadian show, and it's set, well, it's filmed in Iqaluit, which is the capital of Nunavut, which is, they broke the Northwest Territories, and I think it was, I was moving from Newfoundland to Nova Scotia at the time, and they broke the Northwest Territory into Nunavut on the to the east and the Northwest Territory to the west. So the capital of the Northwest Territory in the west is Yellowknife, right? Yeah, so White Horse is in the Yukon Territory, Yellowknife is in the Northwest Territories, and Nunavut is in the Iqaluit is the capital of Nunavut. And so this show was filmed in Iqaluit, but they called it Ice Cove. And so it's the fictional town of Ice Cove. But when you see the town where they filmed it, it's Iqaluit. And Iqaluit is a tiny little place. It's so cute. And the show is adorable. It's real. It's a sitcom, believe it or not, about Inuit people. It's great. So anyway, so at the solstice, the sun is directly on top of the sky at the Tropic of Cancer and nowhere else, because we're here, we're sitting at almost the 42nd parallel. 42nd parallel goes through Massachusetts. We're at about 41.8 right here in Mansfield. And so the day length in the Northern Hemisphere, the June solstice marks the shortest nights and the longest days of the year. For the Southern Hemisphere, it's the longest nights and the shortest days. And this reverses when you're at our winter solstice. Well, they're calling it the June solstice because depending where you are, it's the winter or summer solstice. So there you go. So ancient cultures knew that the sun's path across the sky, the length of daylight, the location of sunrise and sunset all shifted in a regular way through the year. With this in mind, they built monuments like Stonehenge in England and Machu Picchu in Peru to follow the sun's yearly progress. The Earth doesn't orbit upright with respect to the plane of our orbit around the sun. Our world is tilted on its axis by 23.5 degrees. Throughout the year, the tilt causes Earth's northern and southern hemispheres to trade places in receiving the sun's light and warmth most directly. So it's Earth's tilt, not our distance from the sun, that causes winter and summer, although we are further from the sun during the winter solstice because at the top of the Arctic Circle is much closer to the sun than we are, and the Antarctic Circle is far away in the summer, and that reverses during the December solstice. So the ancient cultures knew about this. And through the year, the tilt causes the northern and hemispheres to trade places in receiving sun's light. And so our planet is closest to the sun in January and farthest from the sun in July during the northern hemisphere summer. So the signs of the June solstice in nature, you can see all over the place. All of Earth's creatures, nothing is so fundamental as the length of the day, and the sun is the ultimate source of all light and warmth on the Earth's surface. If you live in the Northern Hemisphere, you might notice the early dawns and late sunsets and the high arc of the sun across the sky each day. You might also see how the sun appears in the sky at local noon, and also be sure to look at your noontime shadow. Around the time of the solstice, it's your shortest noontime shadow of the year. You look like, you know, a quarter of your size. It's very cute. If you're tuned into outdoors, you know the peaceful, comforting feeling that accompanies these signs and signals of the year's longest day. So that is all about the solstice. Everything you wanted to know. Enjoy the solstice. Enjoy the long days and shorter nights. One thing that's hard for me is when the sun comes up, I wake up no matter what time I've gone to bed. So I need to get in the habit of going to bed earlier. I I was wired out last night. I often am wired up on Friday. I had to go to the hospital and visit Ron. And so I was kind of wired and I didn't get to sleep until midnight, and which I shouldn't do. And then I woke up at 6:30, like, you know, a little before 7. So I didn't really get enough sleep. So I hope I get a nap in today. Take good care of yourself. Enjoy the outdoor weather. We're not having any heat waves in the next little while. I mean, we're going to have 70s and 80s next week, which is kind of nice. And today, I don't think we're going to see 80. So anyway, enjoy that. We do have a few rainy days. So, in the summertime. Okay. Did you know that 2 hours of strength training a week can help you to live longer? And everybody wants that, right? And all you need is 2 hours of strength training. Now that means, you know, you have to spend 2 hours doing strength training. And, you know, and strength training can be anything. It can be weights. It can be body weight exercises. You don't have to go to the gym. You can do it at home. So there's a new study that found that 90 to 120 minutes of strength training each week could help promote longevity. 1.5 to 2 hours of weekly strength training lowered the risk of death from cardiovascular neurological diseases and death from any cause. The findings add to the known health benefits of strength training, including bone health, improved balance, and weight management. Strength training is heralded as a valuable aspect of an exercise regimen and regular physical activity. Strength and resistance training offer myriad benefits. They help improve bone strength, balance, and help you with weight management. There was a new study that found that aiming for 90 to 120 minutes of strength training each week may help lower your risk of death. This was a 30-year study, and it was published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. Found no additional benefits for more than 120 minutes of strength training. So 2 hours is all you need, and you can do that in whatever increment you want. You could do 20 minutes. You'd have to do 20 minutes 6 days a week, but you could do 30 minutes. So what is it? What did they say? 1.5 to 2. So 90 to 120 minutes. If you could do a half hour 3 times a week, you'd be good. You still want to engage in aerobic exercise and increase your heart rate. Another important aspect of exercise is strength training with free weights, weight machines, and body weight exercises. So by training and growing your muscle mass, you can improve your metabolic health and help reduce cardiovascular risk. So 1.5 to 2 hours of strength training lowers death risk by 13%. The research, they drew on 30 years of data from three study groups, from the health professionals follow-up study, from the nurses' health study, two volumes of the nurses' health study. These totaled over 147,000 patients. Over 31,000 of these were male, and 115,000, almost 116,000 were women. The average age at the beginning of the study was 54. So they were older people. And participants were questioned every 2 years about the time they spent on strength training and aerobic exercise each week for up to 30 years. The aerobic exercises included brisk walking, running or jogging, swimming, cycling, tennis and squash, strenuous outdoor work, which they counted. And, you know, around here, a lot of people, that's what they do. They, you know, they hay the fields, they work the farm, they muck the stalls. Ron is building a shed, and stair climbing. Strength training includes exercises using weights or body weights, such as push-ups, lunges, and squats. During the course of the study, almost 36,000 participants died. A higher weekly and long-term level of strength training was associated with a lower risk of death. The researchers found that 90 to 119 minutes per week of strength training was associated with a 13% lower risk of death from any cause. No further benefits were seen above 120 minutes per week. So the researchers found that 90 to 120 minutes a week strength training was associated with a 19% lower risk of dying from cardiovascular disease, and the same amount of strength training also lowered the risk of death from neurological disease by 27%. A lower risk of cancer was only seen at lower levels of strength training. A 9% lower risk was observed at 1 to 29 minutes per week, and 12% lower risk at 30 to 59 minutes per week. So that's interesting. So if you keep it to an hour, then you have a lower risk of cancer. Since it's an observational study, that you can't do firm conclusions of cause and effect, because all they're doing is interviewing people. They're not observing them. I mean, they're They're observing them. They're taking surveys, and that's how they're getting their data. The limitations include the self-reported nature of the data, the exclusion of strength training activities such as calisthenics and Pilates, and the lack of information on the duration of each exercise, the intensity of strength training, any of which could have influenced the findings. There's still an association between regular strength training and mortality rates and overall health. So the study reported an optimal range of 90 to 120 minutes per week, although benefits may be seen with lower targets, and adds to a growing body of already established evidence for these benefits. So what counts as strength training? When you think of strength training, you may automatically think of exercising with weights. However, there are other ways to add strength training to your routines, even if you don't have weights. You can do resistance band training, and you know, you can get videos, and you can find videos online to help you with resistance band training, and get lists of exercises that you can do. You can do push-ups. Those are exciting. You can do squats. You can do lunges. You can do gardening. You can do yoga. So if you do restorative or yin yoga where you're lying down a lot, that's not going to count as strength training. But when you do a regular vinyasa class where you're standing up and you're moving through poses, that counts as strength training. So if you're doing two-hour-long yoga classes a week, you're good. But they have to be vinyasa classes, or they have to be power yoga. They don't have to be power yoga. They can be, as long as you're doing vinyasas or you're doing poses where you're using strength to hold yourself up. And that count, downward dog is one of them. Any of your warriors, warrior one, two, three, all of those are strength poses. Standing on one foot, so that would be your warrior three. Warrior three, can have different arms. Chair pose, tree pose. Any pose where you're standing on one leg, that counts as resistance training. So the yoga class that counts as strength training is one where you support your body weight. And if it includes vinyasas, planks, downward dogs, warrior one, two, three, that counts. So if you don't care to do weights, there's definitely classes you can do where you don't feel like you're exercising and you're going to get your strength training. And remember, if you regularly do at least an hour and a half of gardening where you're lifting and carrying things, you're pushing wheelbarrows, you're digging, you're planting, you're hauling things around, that counts. And farm work, absolutely. And or if you are cutting and transporting wood, which a lot of people around here do because we have wood stoves and we're transporting pellets. Or if people cut wood and they stack wood and they schlep wood into their furnaces or into their wood stoves. And that absolutely counts. You just have to do something like that for 1.5 to 2 hours a week. But there are some people have jobs that are very active. And so if you have a very active job, like you work on a farm or you're a carpenter, you build houses, you build furniture, and you're moving and schlepping and carrying, then that counts. So you have, the benefits are lowered blood pressure, improved cholesterol, improved endothelial function. Blood vessels are going to be more elastic and you'll have more inflammation control, more blood flow, and better cardiovascular health. Your metabolic health will be improved and you'll have a decrease in type 2 diabetes risk and improved insulin sensitivity. Your musculoskeletal health will be good. You'll have better bone density, reduction of osteoporosis, osteoarthritis risks. Your mental health and sleep will be better and your body composition will be better. When you build muscle mass is metabolically active tissue. It requires hormones to maintain it, but it also produces hormones, particularly androgens in men and women, whatever your gender is. If you have more muscle mass, you're going to produce more androgens. So you're going to produce, and it's an upward cycle. So when you do resistance training, you make more androgens like testosterone and DHEA. So you make more of those things, and then the testosterone and the DHEA maintain the muscle mass, which is really great. And when you have more androgens on board, whether you're a male or female, you're going to feel better. You're going to feel calmer and happier and more energetic, and you're going to rest better, and your blood sugar will be better. Everything improves when you do resistance training. So when you plan to start a new exercise regimen, it's a good idea to consult with your doctor if you have any health issues, and you want to try to find exercises, activities that you will enjoy that'll make it more likely that you'll stick with the routine, and plan to ease into the routine gradually, setting smaller goals that can improve your confidence to eventually get to higher levels. So there you go. So resistance training is good for you. Who knew? All right. So next week, we're probably going to talk more about Lyme disease. I'm on a Lyme kick right now. I wanted to talk about early symptoms of the various tick-borne illnesses and why you should be concerned about them. And we will talk about tick-borne relapsing fever. I think I may have already talked about the Lone Star tick. I think, yeah, we talked about the Lone Star tick last week. So we'll talk more. I had some requests to talk about Lyme disease because Lyme disease, there's a lot of ticks in the tick season is pretty bad this year, and a lot of the ticks have Lyme disease, and so people are getting Lyme at higher rates this year. I will be interested to see when the stats come out, what actually happens. But I am going to let you go because I have to go get Ron. I'm very excited. I'm going to be able to get him home from the hospital. So I'm going to let you go. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS stores and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening.